Hello and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this week's episode features a conversation I had with one of my brother's friends, Oscar Huang, who is getting his PhD in chemistry and has some really insightful things to say about his experience and what it means to get a PhD. So I hope you enjoy. Okay, so Oscar, so why don't you take me back a little bit to undergrad? Tell me about your undergraduate major, and did you always know you wanted to be? Did you always know you wanted to major in chemistry? I guess let's start with that.
I'd say that was a weird period of time in terms of just like deciding, because like you're a young person. Starting college, I feel like everyone went through that. And for me personally, it was a decision between chemistry and physics. And for whatever reason, I just decided like, oh, I'm better at this class than others. And I was working with my professor quite a lot, my undergraduate advisor quite a lot at a pretty early time. And he definitely had a big impact on me. So at a certain point, I was like, well, you know, like I like where I'm headed. I like working for Alex, so I'm just going to keep doing this. And definitely individuals can have very huge and profound impact on you in terms of just like where you decide where your career path should go. And I definitely would say that was one of the reasons why I wanted to go for a PhD at the time.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Did you receive specific encouragement from your advisor about a PhD, or was it more, sort of observational from your side?
It would definitely be more passively that I was getting a feeling that, oh, what am I going to do with a major like this? What am I going to, like, there's always this stereotype of liberal arts college students who are either just like done for school for what for forever, and there's always the group that's just like, oh, I don't have no school, so I need to keep going back and get a higher degree, and I fell into the latter group. So that was one thing, and then and also just like re-chatting with him at the time, it was really just him talking about his grad school experiences. Definitely was one of the reasons why I was like, oh, well, I don't have to know everything that I want to do for the entirety of my career at this point. Could be a good buffer, and like that's definitely like part, like a, it sounds bad, but like it,
no, well, it's common. I think it's, I know, common.
It's,
yeah,
it's definitely a small fraction of just my mentality at the time. And then I was in this physics class that I was really into. And I was looking out for chemistry type research, and I was like, well, you know, like chemistry, physics, whatever. I don't really care what it is, but I really want to do this specific type of research. So that's what I went after.
Cool. So I assume that you did research at Haverford. Did you have a lot of experience with that, or was it just for your dissertation? Your thesis?
I worked three summers. The three summers I was at Haverford, I worked for Alex for all of them. So I had the opportunity to work for his undergrad advisor at Northwestern, where I am right now at the time. Oh. But some of the visa situations didn't really pan out. I was to blame, but I stayed and just spent all my summers there working for
it. Yeah. What was your impression of research as a whole at that point?
Research as a whole, I would say, was a lot of learning. And just, especially from an undergrad standpoint, it really felt like everything's new. You can really just get into anything and learn a whole bunch about it. So and there's always someone that you can talk to so that you can recheck whether you learned specific things or not. So that was part of the impression, and it was also just that you don't necessarily get something worked out like some of the projects. It just felt like, which I felt more these days, especially that some of the projects just don't necessarily pan out. But way back in the days, it definitely felt like everything's kind of just floating in the air, and you're not exactly sure what exactly is going to turn out to be the big thing that you're going to be able to potentially go for a publication, because back then it really mattered for an undergrad to have a publication so it looks good on paper.
True. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So you're applying to PhD programs now. Not right now, sorry. You're at the point. We're at the point where you're applying for PhD programs. What are you? What's your kind of your focus in that? Are you looking for specific research topics or schools or locations?
I was very fond of the suburb area.
Interesting. Okay.
So that was part of the reasons why I decided that I was going to come to Northwestern instead of like other places. Definitely, I felt that I was able to have a whole grasp of what the departments are like when I went on visitation weekends and just read, because you can clearly tell from just talking to a variety of professors, then you can tell that what the big focus of the entire department would be, because sometimes like there really are a whole bunch of people that are collaborating on specific, like a general direction. Mm-hmm. And just kind of sense it from talking to people. And I was really into quantum information type stuff and how you can like re-implement it on using like different kind of materials and using chemistry knowledge as well back in the days. So that was really important to me. So those were the things that I was looking for back in the days.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you are in a chemistry department program, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, and you're what year now?
I'm a fourth year. After summer, I'll be a fifth year.
Fifth year, okay. Yeah. So you're wrapping up your fourth year.
I'm almost done.
Yeah, you are almost done. That's great. I assume you're looking forward to it.
I am.
Yeah.
That's why I set up LinkedIn and all. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about your group's research focus?
Historically, the research focus of our group always revolves around these small chemical systems that are inspired by photosynthetic centers. So basically, people want to see what happens when you shine light on it. And this is really, it epitomizes what my undergrad advisor described chemistry as. He was just like, well, it's a study of electrons, basically. And you can actually use a variety of techniques in my current group to recharacterize what happens when you shine light and how the electrons are moving around, especially in like small model systems. Those are pretty interesting. And so then over the years, there are different focus. For example, there was the solar energy period when it was easy to get money. And these days, we shifted the focus a little into using the electron spins as potential qubits for quantum information processing.
Cool.
That's where the money is these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. So what your undergraduate advisor said about the study of electrons, so in the photosynthetic world, that's sort of like, a biological application of that, right? Because that's like how that manifests in living things, right?
Yes. I wish I could understand more about those things. Because we, right now, our group still kind of refocus ourselves on small molecules that you can make in labs. So really, when we talk about this type of work, it's we always call it artificial photosynthetic center. So then whether you actually like emulate what actually happens in the real biological systems, I don't know, maybe part of it.
Don't know. Yeah. So you're not really using any biology background or?
No.
Yeah. I mean, the way I feel is that like a lot of these science topics these days are very interdisciplinary anyway, right? Like you're not just doing chemistry. You're doing chemistry with a little slant of everything else.
Absolutely. That's how I felt. And especially that was a big change in attitude, I would say, from when I was in college and now. Back in college, I was like, oh, wow. I was the person who retested the idea of like going for pre-med or people on the pre-med track. So then like, I don't think I took a biology class back in the days. But now I'm just like thinking about my career and just thinking about like research projects. I'm really open to about like, especially thinking about just like how meaningful a research is, like what your product or what your research results, how it's going to impact other people. It really comes to me in a way that it's kind of a lot of times like it's more interesting if it's in a biological system because it's actually like connected to what happens to people, and that's something that you can't live without in a society, right?
Yeah, at that point, it's not just about publishing a paper, right? It's about discovering something and learning something and sharing it with the world.
Yeah, like your the title of your podcast.
Very cool. So that's sort of what your group focuses on. Is there anything more specific about your thesis work?
My thesis work is on this type of system that goes through a specific type of charge transfer sequence. Like basically designed it a certain way, so that you can presumably teleport an electron spin over to another site. This happens within a small molecule, so then like 2 nanometers away. This is a type of protocol that's actually under intense research right now in the quantum field, especially. Those folks out there, they're trying to actually teleport or transmit quantum information kilometers away or using satellites and whatever. And in the chemistry world, obviously, it's a lot more challenging in terms of just like extending the distances and whatnot. So, but that it's interesting because right now I'm preparing a manuscript and we're just trying to situate ourselves in the broader picture in the more general field. It's definitely interesting because there are aspects that are very unique to chemical systems that are very beneficial, and there are things that you can just imagine people start questioning, like, why are you picking this system over others? And you just have to come up with a really good answer for that.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. So if someone asks me what you're doing, I'll just say working on teleportation. Is that a good answer?
Not the type of teleportation that you normally would think about. I think this is also where scientists really want a little publicity and just like a little bit of attention, so then they recoin this word in a very good way. You're not going to be able to teleport one person somewhere else. That's just not happening. What you are teleporting or that's why I use the word transmit, is it's that quantum states are limited by this rule called no cloning rule. So basically, if you want to redraw an analogy between quantum information and just classical computing, the major difference is that in classical computing, you can replicate a piece of information however many copies you want. But in the quantum world, quantum states are supposed to be unique, that you cannot reduplicate it, hence the no cloning theorem. So the challenge lies in the fact that if you can't duplicate it, how are you going to transmit it? And this is the type of protocol that are supposedly very important for you to re-understand, like how you're going to be able to create a real network. Because if you really want to do something that's like computational or just like interface quantum computing with classical computing, you need to be able to have a network and retransmit information from one place to another. So that's a very long way of describing.
Yeah.
But the short...
No, that was great.
Way is to transmit quantum information.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Well, I'm going to be thinking about that for a little while, I think.
I'll wait for
kind of makes your head spin.
Sorry about that. Wait for my paper come out and I'll send you the manuscript.
Yeah, please do. So tell me about your research group size. What's kind of the environment like in your department and your group?
It varies in my department. I know there are smaller groups that are more limited to 8 to 10 people, or maybe even smaller. And I think Northwestern are also having a lot of new faculty, so then they're definitely smaller groups. And there are definitely the larger groups that are very well known, very established PIs, like with 50, 60 people. Our group kind of sits in the middle. When I started, I think there were like 30 people in total, including all the research professors and postdocs. And now it's closer to maybe 20, 25.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Do you like that size?
I like the...
I guess you don't know anything different, but...
I would say I like the structure just in terms of like getting help, because I definitely... Yeah. That was definitely one of the things that I was also considering, because I definitely did not want to be smothered in attention. I definitely want a lot of my autonomy. But also, as a grad student, you definitely need a lot of help from, and just like a lot of just like mentoring. And I think the structure that we have right now is that we have two or three research professors that are working very closely with day-to-day operation, while you can still talk to my PI Mike all the time. But it just depends from it kind of differs from individual to individual. Some people feel more inclined to just like chat with them very frequently, and some of them are just like, well, you know, I'd like to reaccumulate information, put together a story before I hand it off to you. So in that sense, you have a lot of liberty deciding like what exactly you want to do and how you just coexist with others. So I think that was really cool.
Yeah. So do you have any sense of what you want to do next?
I know I don't want to be in academia, because like I kind of hinted at earlier, it's that I want a sort of immediacy in terms of just like seeing the impact that you have. Like, I definitely love doing science. That's why I'm probably going to stay in technology, and just like using math and physics and whatnot, just playing with your computer and just like trying to do things. That's definitely something that I love. So for first step, probably some type of R&D, if I can find a job, but we'll put that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Did you ever think you might want to be a professor?
Not really. I thought
at
a certain point I was like, if I can. Yeah, pedagogy is definitely not something that I always have in mind. I'm naturally pretty good at helping other people out in labs. Like, I was teaching undergrad Orgo labs and whatnot, and I was getting good feedback, and I was doing that when I was teaching at Northwestern as well. But definitely not the type, not the preachy type. So I was like, I can't really chase after other people and ask for results or updates. So I was like, well, you know, like it's fun that I can do my own things, learn about science on my own, and preferably at my own pace. It'd be interesting if I can manage a small group of people and try to get together a product and work towards it and re-put it together and present it.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I'm really interested in terms of just getting science done and then communicating it to a specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm striving to do.
Nice. Let's see. This isn't one of my questions, but I sent to you. What are some new skills you've learned or gained during your PhD? Could be in your program, or could be, you know, extracurricular, if you will.
Definitely something important in my life is that I became a lot more handy.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I work with a bunch of instruments, like the spectroscopy type work. Usually just need to work with a whole bunch of lasers and then magnetic resonance type stuff. You stick around magnets, and these are, in general, like just maintaining these things, keeping these things running, usually just means that you need to know how to work your way around a multimeter or just like making sure a cooling tubing is actually adapted correctly so that water doesn't leak out. It definitely paid off, because there was one time that my kitchen was leaky, and I was like, well, you know, I feel very strongly that I can use my kitchen, so I'm just going to do it myself. And I think it was past midnight when I eventually fixed that P-bend, basically just the draining thing that was too old and kind of just broke off. And I was able to just like refine the right adapters and then the washers, and we just like put it back together. And I was like, oh, well, that's pretty cool. And just in terms of trying to identify electrical issues at home, because we had a power surge recently at home. And then I was like, well, what's causing everything is short, and I can kind of narrow it down and just like try to communicate that to my landlord, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah, because you're like, if I can fix the spectrometer in lab, I can figure out what's going on with my kitchen plumbing, right?
Oh yeah, it's definitely like the learning curve, and just like read the confidence you have once you re-manage to re-deal with something that's supposedly a lot more sophisticated, and then you come back to home.
Yeah.
The natural mentality is that there's no reason why I can't fix this, or really like explain to other people, the professionals, what's wrong.
Wow, that was a great answer. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So what do you do for fun? What do you do outside of your program?
I exercise, and I try to stay active in general. But also I was looking for something that's just drastically different from what I've done in the past, and also from research lab activities. There was definitely a lot of time in COVID when I was taking a lot of walks in the woods, and eventually I started doing this type of ecological restoration volunteering work.
Oh, cool.
So Cook County, where I am right now, they have a pretty unique volunteering program. So they have these forest preserves with stewards assigned to them. These are also volunteers that are leading the type of restoration at specific sites, and really just like in terms of getting rid of invasive species, and really like trying to foster a better, more sensible environment for plants and animals to regrow and just like come back. That was, I think it's a cause that I can really get behind, because I think just throughout my PhD, a lot of time that I spent was also just like soul searching, in terms of like trying to find the meaning of the work that I have in lab, the work that I do outside. So that was definitely something that was very important to me, and I found it very meaningful and fulfilling. So that's what I do for fun these days.
That's great. That's interesting that it sort of came out of COVID too. I feel like a lot of people had, well, one, a lot of people were doing soul searching during COVID because what else was there to do? Exactly. But also sort of taking walks and turning that into something that you've still continued to do is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, there's definitely an aspect of just like self-improvement and just like re-feeling that you belong to a community outside work. That was very important to me. So that was something that I found.
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna jump to sort of some of my wrap up questions, if that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
With you. Great. So this is a good one for I think an almost fifth year grad student. Mm-hmm. So what was something challenging that you faced at any point during this PhD process?
Definitely like to kind of just emphasize what I re-said before in terms of just like trying to find the meaning of your research and just read. I think it was an interesting and fun process when I really went down to a quantum conference just down at UChicago earlier last year, but then we just sitting surrounded by all these physicists doing quantum research and just trying to find like why is a chemical system unique, and we just trying to come up with a good answer, trying to convince yourself that the things that you're doing is interesting. That was definitely one of the challenges. And then another thing that I would say is just in general, it's the structure of a natural science PhD. Usually I think that it's very loose in terms of just self-assessment. So just like trying, because like if you're not having, like sure you can use publications as like a milestone in terms of just like where you are in your program and just like how what your learning process. But sometimes it's not enough motivation, so it's just really trying to find ways to really assess how much you've learned, how much you've grown as an individual. I think that was definitely something that I was having a little difficulty with, and really just like I'm still trying to figure out how to quantify it, or just like really just to have a good way to represent it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So, you know, what is it like for, I guess, at Northwestern? Is it pretty, is the process of like the milestones and graduation pretty clear, or is it kind of very independent?
Earlier on, it was definitely a lot more structured in terms of just like taking classes and going through your qual. There are still major milestones that you're supposed to hit, but that kind of just blends into your daily activities.
Yeah.
And it becomes more difficult to really say, hey, this is the time that I decide that I'm going to do this. And yeah, those are the times that are a little more difficult in terms of just like trying to make sure that you do those things and then just like do your self-assessment.
Right, because nobody else is going to do it for you or push you to do it, right?
And you'll be able to graduate no problem as well. So then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. So maybe related or maybe not, what advice would you give to yourself in year one?
I would definitely say, I guess over the years, I really realized that no matter what you do, especially, well, even for natural science, as going for a PhD, it really sounds like it's a very scientific process, but like it's strictly, you know, doing research and just like doing experiments. But also at this point, I really start feeling like it's also a process that requires a lot of creativity in terms of just like how you want to guide a project and where its direction would head to. And that was something that I did not know or had no way of understanding back in the days. And I think it would have been really helpful if I just really tried to read a lot more back in the days, just trying to understand what other people are doing and really trying to think of creative ways to really like use other people's results, what other people learned, to really build a strong project and just like really trying to do interesting research at the end of the day.
Yeah. Because that more thorough background and foundation would allow you to be even more creative in your own sort of unique ways of solving a problem or things to different things to try.
Yes. And that's definitely something that I learned at this point. And I like to believe that it applies to a lot of things in life as well.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to keep believing that for now.
Well, I think your point about creativity coming into even something like a natural science discipline is a good one that is maybe not as obvious to everybody, but I completely agree that especially doing a PhD, like there are no rules, you know, like, I mean, there are, but there's no rules when it comes to how to solve the problem. And so the more creative you are, almost the more successful you might be.
Yeah, because that really comes in hand to hand with something that I think about a lot is that you can think of it as a 9-to-5 job if you want to think about it that way. Like, that's totally fine. But I personally don't believe that's the most productive way of learning, just because you have to, well, again, like, there's a boundary between a healthy approach to this learning process, and there's like a limit where you just go past it and you usually just stop. But I think this is more just so that how I approach my research is that sometimes I just spend like an entire day like sitting around the lake trying to come up with a reasonable experiment. I don't call it a waste of my time, because a lot of times if you rush into things, if you just redo things because you want to clock in at 9 and clock out at 5, you're just forcing something upon yourself, and that more likely than not would just come out to be fruitless anyways. So
yeah,
that was something I learned the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's a really good point. Okay, so my last question is, do you have a good memory or story so far from your program? You know, obviously there are some challenges along the way and some ups and downs, but when you think back, what will you remember as being kind of a good experience?
Definitely in the time when I was leading this out of school Chicago River Day event. I was being a site captain, and then obviously people signed up on the internet and we're getting reasonable amount of this publicity, but I felt strongly about it enough that I was just talking to some of my lab mates and some of the coworkers, and I was like, well, you know, like it wouldn't hurt if you just come out, enjoy the nice weather, because I think it was May this year. And I was like, well, you know, like could be drizzling a little, but at the end of the day, you're going to be able to, because our mission on the day was to pick up a lot of trash around Chicago, like along specific patch of Chicago River. And we're just trying to, you know, like help, like bolster the local, like ecosystem.
Sure.
So that was, we saw an eagle that day. That was pretty cool.
An eagle?
Yep.
Wow.
And basically just like re-seeing my friends in a different setting, it was definitely interesting. So, and just really feeling like that's a connection that you get because you go to the grad school, but also like you have something else that's going on outside of grad school. I thought that was a very positive experience.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. When I talk to people on this, you know, on this show, a lot of a lot of those stories, those positive experiences happen outside of the lab, with other people from the lab. You know, it's like you make those connections as part of your PhD program, but the ones you remember are the ones that are really kind of personal and interactive outside of the lab. So that's cool.
Because at the end of the day, like, you probably don't want to remember the treacherous part of your 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's always the positive part, luckily.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I like to ask it, because I like to sort of force people to think back on the good times, especially if they've already graduated, they're a couple years out. They can think back and be like, oh yeah, that was a good time, you know?
Also just ending the podcast in a positive tone.
Yes, exactly. See, you know, you should start your own podcast. So that's all my questions, Oscar. Do you have anything else to share? Did we miss anything?
No, I think that was it. Yeah.
Okay.
It was just definitely fun, just like kind of going through the entirety of what I've gone through and just really trying to pin down specific moments that are, or just like specific thoughts that I came up along the way. So
yeah,
definitely doing the podcast is definitely like a fun experience, like a fun exercise in terms of just like kind of get them out of my brain. Just really trying to remembering all those. So that's
hopefully sharing with others who are in similar boats or about to be in the same situation is useful for those folks. I hope so.
I feel like for different people, they have different approaches in terms of just like how they want to grow personally, how they want to go about restarting a career, whether their PhD will be or will not be related to their careers. But overall, like, there's no right or wrong way of doing this. It's just more of like a process of sharing experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I am interested in this manuscript you're working on, so definitely send that to me. And also, good luck wrapping up everything. And maybe when you enter the world of industry and R&D, we'll get you back on the show and you can talk about it. How about that?
That sounds good. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Oscar. Thanks so much. Thanks to Oscar for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates at Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.